This is Identity at the Center.
If it has anything to do with IAM, this is the go-to podcast. Now your hosts, Jim McDonald and Jeff Stedman.
Welcome to the Identity at the Center podcast. I'm Jeff and that's Jim. Hey, Jim.
Hey, Jeff. How are you?
Oh, not so bad. Yourself?
Doing good. So break down the, what do we call this, the fourth wall or fifth wall?
Fourth wall. Yeah, pull back the curtain. What's going on?
There's usually four walls though, right?
Well, so there's three walls typically when you're talking about like media. It's the two walls on the left and the one behind the actors. The fourth wall is the one that you're looking through that you're not supposed to have interaction with. But occasionally we do kick down that fourth wall and we're talking directly to our audience. Doesn't make any sense in the context of a podcast, but we just go with it.
Yeah, no, it's I'm glad you understood the whole context of that saying, because I didn't, but now I do. And just so, kicking down the fourth wall, you're in a hotel, that's why you sound the way you do, and I'm at home, and it's Saturday, and it was manual labor Saturday for me, which I'm not used to doing, and I'm like exhausted, and I hardly did anything. Let's just be clear, like I had a bunch of contractors here and I was running around and helping them do, and I was moving some things, but reality I wasn't doing very much physical labor, yet it's exhausting.
Yeah, anyway, I'm management. I choose not to do that if I can avoid it.
Hey, I think it's a good thing that you can do for the economy to spend money to spur the economy on, and at the same time you don't have to do those things. So it's a win-win.
Yeah, well, I definitely do my part in that case then. So it's for the economy. Let's just call it that, not my own laziness or ineptitude.
Yeah, it's you being altruistic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, I like that. I'm altruistic, spending money so I don't have to do things. So should we talk about the elephant in the room real quick?
We should, because it's...
You know, it's been bothering me for two weeks now. Yeah. So in our last episode, we ended kind of talking about NFL, and I went hard on the Bears. Like, I was all in, and you know, made that prediction, I think, 3 weeks before we started. Today is September 23rd, so now there's two games that have already passed. The Bears look like crap. Jordan Love tore them up in the first game. They made Baker Mayfield look like an MVP in his game against in their game against Tampa Bay. So just as quickly as I drank the Bears Kool-Aid before the season started, I am back off of it. This is why you don't come to Identity of the Center for football picks.
Yeah, well, I thought the elephant in the room was going to be my pick for the Super Bowl winner of the New York Jets. And while they did win the first game, which I predicted, the star quarterback that they brought over, you know, lost the rest of his season on the first set of downs, so that's pretty bad. So,
Achilles.
Did I mention Go Eagles?
Oh, they look good. I mean, but they were already a favorite in the beginning. And I was also I'm also a Niners fan, and I did not pick the Niners because I thought that was too easy, that they would beat up on Pittsburgh, and they absolutely did. And now they are 3-0 as of the Thursday night game last night, where they took care of business against a not good New York Giants team.
So how about some more non-identity news? I mean, it came out this past week that Delta is changing their SkyMiles program, which, I mean, you know, it's just like with football teams. You go all in on your airline, and if they change the rules of the game, at least they did give us plenty of notice, but this is a change that will go into effect when, like, next year. Some of it's the year
after that.
It
starts like February 1st or something like that. Like, their cycle runs February 1st to January 31st. And yeah, I don't know how I feel about it yet, other than I don't know if, you know, if you're a Diamond member now, it got a lot harder to become Diamond. It also became a lot harder to become Platinum, but I feel like I'm right on the cusp of staying in the Platinum area. But I don't know. I mean, the biggest thing for me was they're cutting the number of Delta Club visits to only 10 per year, even if you have the Delta Club, like Amex card, which is what I've been using.
Yeah,
so silly. And then why would I have the Amex card? And that's not limited anymore, is what I'm asking.
there's some other Amex card too that is not the Delta one that somehow you get 5 visits. And then I think you can get visits at the other clubs as well. So maybe that would be the way to go. But the gist of the change is that, you know, they're no longer using a combination of miles flown or segments flown plus qualifying dollars. Now it's just qualifying dollars. My opinion,
just straight cash, homie.
Straight cash, homie. My opinion is that so Delta is always more expensive than American Airlines. So they have a lot of competing routes, and let's just say I've rarely seen the circumstance where Delta's cheaper. Now, in my opinion, they provide a much better service, and it's worth it to pay more. But my feeling is, like, this is to try to push people to book the more expensive flights. Maybe
for
business travelers to wait till the last minute to book your flight, things like that.
Yeah, I mean, higher fares obviously will help with that. Spending a lot of money on the Amex card. I mean, they're just a bank now. That's basically what it is they want people to spend money on their Amex, you know, their branded Amex cards. So if you spend $75,000 on your Amex reserve card, guess what? You get to go to the club for free as many times as you want, you know, all the next year. But if you spend $74,999, guess what? You're limited to 10. So I don't know. It just, I'm seriously thinking about what I'm going to do, not this year, but going into next year. So meaning for the 2024 kind of mileage accruing season into 2025, I have choices. I can either go American or Delta. Those are really kind of my only two real choices living where I live. And we'll see what happens. I can tell you right now, the Delta subreddit is not happy about these changes.
I mean, what do you think? What are the odds that they renege or change their mind on these changes?
I don't think there's any chance whatsoever.
Really?
Yeah, I just don't see it happening because they've already come out and said it. They're basically following American. American does this already. They have a very similar mileage approach, or dollars approach, I should say, where it's based on dollars spent. Now, theirs is a little bit easier, I think, to accrue you know, certain statuses. The dollar value amount seems to be a little bit lower. But this is just where the industry is going. United is starting to do this as well. It really doesn't matter how far you fly or even how many times you fly. It's how expensive are your flights, and are you spending money on whatever the co-branded credit card is to, you know, drive that up. I think they made like $4 billion on the Amex spend of their customers.
Okay, so just one comment, somewhat in their defense, is so the Delta Clubs, whatever it was last year or something like that, it was absolutely ridiculous. You get to the club,
and they still are.
Stand in line. If you only had, they changed the rules, and then it like cleared up, right? But now it's right back to ridiculous. So what happened?
I think there's just more people flying. I mean, flights are up everywhere. The airport that my home airport is Asheville, North Carolina, and every month it's been 25% busier than the previous month for like 3 years straight, minus pandemic kind of stuff. There's way more people flying, and I do think there are probably too many people who have access to the club for whatever reason, but I can tell you, having flown United out of Chicago for a decade, never once had to wait to get into the United Club at O'Hare, which is like one of their hubs. Atlanta's been a totally different story at Delta.
Yeah. I kind of feel like the other thing is like the club experience has kind of like fallen off a little bit. The seats are very close to each other. I feel like the food is still good, but it's not that great, but it's better than sitting at the gate, stuff like that.
Sometimes, yeah. I can tell you, I'm not standing outside of a club for more than 3 minutes to get in. That's time I'll go find a quiet part of the terminal. I mean, free food and free Wi-Fi used to be the draw. Now you can get free Wi-Fi pretty much at every airport. The food's a separate story, but I don't think the food is not that much better than I would
than spend restaurants, time yeah.
waiting for it. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah, I guess we'll see. And, you know, I think if I'm actually a little more optimistic that if enough people complain about it, they may do something, especially this bit with you'd only go to the club 10 times unless you spend $75,000. A bunch of people drop their cards, which I'm considering, right? I wouldn't have considered it otherwise. But if a bunch of people drop their cards, then, you know, that's going to really hit their top line.
But maybe that's what they want. Maybe that's how they solve crowding. I don't know.
But I'm with you. I don't think they care enough about the crowding. I don't think that the crowding is a big enough problem that they're willing to take a big hit to their top line.
No, man. Make money and then we'll figure out how to fix it later.
Yeah, exactly.
What else have we been working on? I've been working on the YouTube channel. So I kind of teased it, maybe it was an episode or two ago, that I was starting to put things up on our YouTube channel. And so now we're starting to get more episodes from our back catalog, slowly but surely getting uploaded. Roughly 3 a day or so are going up into our YouTube channel. You can find a link to our YouTube channel on our website, idacpodcast.com. In the upper right, I've got a little logo for YouTube. You click that, that'll take you straight to our videos. If you just type in idac.live into your browser for the address, that'll take you to our live episodes that we started and kind of trailed off and never came back to. But that'll still take you to the YouTube channel that has all of our podcast episodes. So the plan going forward is roughly 3 a day or so to get them until we get caught up. And then going forward, we'll have episodes up on YouTube as well. So I know some people like to watch their audio podcasts, which feels weird to say, but here we are.
What I've seen, so I kind of feel like YouTube is also a streaming service for music and podcasts now, where I'll see people at the gym who just basically stream YouTube and they can lock their phone or whatever. I think you have to have the premium YouTube that you can lock your phone and you're not going to get hit with ads, but, you know, what's the premium YouTube, like $10 a month? I think that's...
Yeah, $10 a month. No ads, and you get YouTube Music kind of bundled in with it. So,
I've been thinking about doing it, honestly, because, you know, I watch YouTube enough that, sitting through the ads is just not worth it.
Yeah, I'm a subscriber. Ads are
very annoying.
I've been for almost a year now, and it's worth it for me because I spend so much time on YouTube just watching stuff.
Yeah. Well, I'm hoping that in the future, so this is my plea to vendors, is to put more webinars and videos that you have on your website, put them on your YouTube channel. You know, people would like to be able to sit at their home TV and just watch identity management content. You know, it's like in your free time, the ability to educate yourself. And I think you have to make it more entertaining than just webinars. I mean, some organizations like Okta does a really good job with their YouTube channel. Other software vendors are way behind, but I think it's a valuable way to get the content out there, especially, and you have to follow, and you don't have to follow, but I think where you can really benefit is like the same model that we do, which is educate and entertain first and then talk about your product, you know, as secondary or tertiary, right? It's not the main driver of all your content. If all your content is for is like buy our product, people aren't going to be that interested.
Yeah. I mean, there's a time and place for information versus entertainment. It's kind of like the old thing is like, I just want a recipe for this thing. I don't need to hear like the 45-minute intro about someone's grandma and whatever. Like, just I'm just looking for the recipe, man. Just give it to me.
Give me the recipe.
But there's some good channels out there. Like IBM Technology is a good YouTube channel. They do like a lot of those whiteboard explainer videos where they're like writing on the screen and kind of explaining different concepts. And they do a good job with it. Obviously, everyone knows who IBM is, but yeah.
I heard today on a podcast, so I don't know if you've seen that commercial where the guy's like, oh, there's a podcast that talks about that, But there's on GTA, which is a video game, Grand Theft Auto. I'm not sure if you've ever heard of it. But,
very familiar.
I guess there's a you can... When you get into the cars now, you can put on the radio and listen to different types of stations. One of the stations is like a Joe Rogan loop and just plays Joe Rogan episodes over, like, there's like 2,000
episodes. It's not Joe Rogan. Yeah, okay. It's a station. I don't remember the name of the station, but they have like different characters on there. One of them is like this guy, Laszlo, who's been in GTA radio for, I don't know, years. Like, he's, I'm at least GTA 4, 5 maybe since then. So he's kind of been a running thing. And they have parodies of, yeah, the different shows of the current day, like when they're actually putting them out there in the game.
Oh, nice.
It's really funny. They're really good.
Yeah. Well, I mean, people spend a lot of time on those games, right? And they're very social. I think what they're talking about with GTA is like it's a chance to, you know, go and do all the things that you can't do, you know, the behaviors you can't do in normal life.
Yeah. I mean, it's a video game.
So we won't get into what those are, but they're all the...
There's a lot of options for ne'er-do-wells. It's a good game. I mean, I've played it. I've beat it, you know, gone through the story at least, and the characters are super memorable, and Trevor is hilarious. If you have ever watched The Walking Dead, he's actually in The Walking Dead. Not Trevor, like the GTA character, but the actor who basically does the voice acting for that. So there's definitely an art form, you know, to video games when they kind of take it to that level where you got voice acting and the story and stuff like that.
Yeah. Yeah, very cool. So the other news is like the day this episode drops is the beginning of Okta's Octane Conference. I'll be there. So I thought I'd go over a few of the sessions that I'm excited about, or kind of like how I'm building my agenda for which sessions I'm going to attend. And as always, they have like awesome keynotes at Okta's conference. So definitely try to hit all the keynotes. Anything with AI in the title, and there are a lot of things with AI in the title. One that really jumped out at me on Wednesday was about IKEA's global deployment journey. And there's a person on LinkedIn, Martin Sandrin, who is the product leader at IKEA.
I was just going to say that. Martin's been posting some good stuff. He's been a good supporter of us. Appreciate that.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, Martin. But I mean, you know, I'm not sure what product leader means relative to this Okta deployment, but I'd really like to hear how they did that. You know, another thing that I've noticed that popped up a few times in the agenda, and I've been hearing more and more about it, is just the idea about backup and resilience of your IDP, or specifically in the case of Octane around Okta. So there's some sessions on that. We're doing a party bus. They're calling it the party bus. I think it's a lot tamer than the name implies. It's kind of like we're going to go see some of San Francisco. And for folks who are, you know, coming to San Francisco maybe for the first time, you know, it's kind of... Most people won't go out and explore San Francisco on their own, especially if you're coming in for the conference and leaving. The idea of this bus is we're going to stop at a few places, a couple of tourist destinations, and let you see, you know, really one of the most beautiful cities in the country. So I think, you know, if you haven't registered for that event and you're interested, check out my LinkedIn feed. We'll also put in the show notes the registration link, but... I think it's going to be a really good time, an opportunity to network as well as, you know, and so if you, this is for obviously people who are in San Francisco at the conference. It's going to be Wednesday night. I think it's like 8 o'clock. We're going to meet, have hors d'oeuvres and beverages, and then get on the bus and go to a couple of tourist destinations and maybe like a rooftop bar, which would be really cool to have kind of like that scenic view of San Francisco. Okay, a couple more sessions. There's one called Double Vision, which is about a deep look into the partnership between login.gov and Okta. And overall, like government and public sector seems to have its own track in Octane. And I'm like really excited because it's like a lot of like state level government, like Missouri and Delaware, and then, of course, that login.gov and how it works with Okta. I'm really interested to learn about that because that's, you know, those deployments are generally very big, and we all know like how big login.gov is. So interested in those, in that session, and then the Missouri and Delaware one, as well as sessions on passkeys. There's at least one on passkeys, and you know, pretty much anything. Oh, I did want to register one complaint. It wouldn't be me if I didn't register at least one complaint. But the Workforce Cloud Roadmap and the Customer Cloud Roadmap, they run at the same time, which is Thursday at 1:15. They're not repeated, as far as I could tell. They only happen once, and they're at the same time in different rooms. So, like, I want to see both roadmaps. You know, I feel like
that's weird.
Yeah, isn't that kind of weird? So that's my one and only complaint. But, you know, anything to do with customer IAM, the Auth0 stuff, I mean, it's really an interesting time in all of that. So interested to hit as many sessions as possible. You know, the other underlying thing that I'm going to be doing there is I'm going to bring my iPhone, turn on my video camera, get a lot of video, and then especially I think I'm going to do this in the vendor hall, but also hallway conversations, is try to interview people. Just, you know, what are you here for? You know, what's your best experience? I haven't really figured out exactly what the interview will be made up of, but just hoping to spend 5 to 10 minutes with people who are there, and then capture a bunch of video. And then, you know, Jeff, you and I will have to go to work on trying to figure out, like, how much of this can we turn into a YouTube video. But I think that'll be, you know, for those especially who couldn't attend, you know, give them a little taste of what it was like to be there.
Yeah, Octane's not a small conference. The first one I went to was last year, and it's big. There's a lot of people that are there. I think, like, what, 1,000, 2,000, something like that? I mean, they take over basically the Moscone Center for it, at least the west portion of it. So people aren't familiar with that. That's pretty much the main convention center in the San Francisco area. But yeah, it's a big conference. It was cool. I dug it. What was last year's celebrities? It was Williams.
Serena and Williams and MJ.
Magic Johnson? Yeah. Which was a lot of fun. So I'm kind of jealous because I won't be there. I will be in a competing conference across the U.S. I'll be in D.C. while you're in San Francisco. That's Identity Week America. So I'm going to be hosting a panel. And my working title right now for it is Modern Authentication, Definitions, Deployments, and the Future Vision. And I have just a killer lineup of panelists. So I've got Ian Glazer. I've got Julie Madusudanan. Hopefully I pronounced that right. She's works for LinkedIn. So she's going to hopefully bring some stories about how they're leveraging modern authentication in the LinkedIn environment. We got Tim Meyeroff from Iris ID Systems, Jeff Rich, who has been on this show before. He's the executive director of the Identity Defined Security Alliance. We've got Megan Seamus from FIDO Alliance. She's the director of marketing. She's also been on the show. She was with us for a few minutes there at Identiverse when we were recording outside of the keynote, sort of like the opening night, stuff like that. And we're just going to get into it. Modern authentication, you know, what is it? How do we define it? How are people in the real world using this? And what are some of the implications or things that we need to think about from a consideration standpoint to getting those sorts of things deployed? And then where do we go from here? Today, it's modern. At some point, modern authentication is going to be considered legacy authentication. You know, where do things go from here in the future? Obviously, there's a lot of support behind passkeys. You know, obviously, there's biometrics that are going to become probably more important. How are we going to authenticate, I don't know, this synthetic person, I think is what we're calling it, AI or whatever the right term is, right? Non-humans, those sorts of things. So it'll be interesting. I'll be out there. I know I'm going to record at least one episode of a podcast with Ian. At least that's the plan. And Steve Hutchison, Hutch, for people who are familiar with him. Ian was kind enough to make the introduction, and both gentlemen agreed to be on the show. So we'll do something while we're out there. And I'm hopeful that I'll get some others, like maybe Jeff from IDSA. Trying to get Julie maybe from LinkedIn. We'll see if that works out. But yeah, that'll be a good time. So hosting a panel, actually, it's the first time I've done that, hosting a panel at a conference. I've been a member of a panel, but this will be the first time being the sort of the MC of it, and then kind of walking around. So I've never been to Identity Week America, but I'm looking forward to it. Seems to be a lot of good content there. And when I'm not on the stage, I'll probably be in a side room somewhere recording something, or just walking the halls and kind of taking it all in. So kind of exciting.
What are the chances that you're going to get a recording of that panel? Because, I mean, that's a lot of power players all at once.
I don't know. I mean, I'll try for it and we'll see. We'll see. No promises. We can kick down a fourth wall. Sometimes conferences like to keep sort of the content to themselves. I'll see what I can do to see if there's able to get a recording. But yeah, no promises on that one. Either you have to be there or not. And that's why we have discount codes, right? So we should probably talk about the discount codes we have, because there's one for Octane, there's one for Identity Week America. If you're listening to this on October 2nd, you better hurry, because Octane has started and Identity Week starts, I think, on the 3rd. Either way, we've got you covered. We'll have links in our show notes for these as well. But we've got, so for Identity Week America, we have IDAC 30 that gets you 30% off the conference pass for Identity Week America. It also works for Identity Week Asia, which is happening, I think, in November of this year. And then for the Octane one, we've got a code. It's OKTNIDAC30. That also gets you 30% off. So kind of a last chance to use those if you haven't registered by the time you're listening to this. Going to assume you're probably not going to make it, but maybe you're local, or maybe you're like, oh, shoot, let me hop on a plane to either D.C. or San Francisco and go check these things out.
Yeah, and beyond that, we're also going to be at the Authenticate Conference, which will be 2 weeks from today when this drops, and we have a discount code for that one as well. Jeff, do you have that on the tip of your tongue?
Yeah, IDAC15 podcast. Get you 15% off.
Get you 15% off. That's the best discount code available, as well as it gets you the opportunity to be entered into a drawing for a gift bag, which we don't know what will be in the gift bag. Swag.
I'm assuming stickers will be in there.
So everybody who attends the conference will get a sticker. And I will also have stickers on hand at Octane. I know I mailed you a bunch of stickers. Do you still have some left?
I do have a few. I was at a conference last week, the Cybersecurity Midwest Summit in Cincinnati area. Gave out a bunch there, which was a lot of fun. So I'm imagining you as like the sticker guru. You're going to have like a bandolier of just like stickers. I didn't tell you this, but I got stopped twice by TSA because of the stickers. For some reason, they showed up as like a gel or a liquid. And yeah, going out of Asheville and then out of Cincinnati, I got stopped both times by TSA, and both times it was because of the stickers. So I don't know.
You know, speaking of stickers, someone hit me up on LinkedIn and said we should have merch.
Merch?
Yeah.
Yeah, we should.
We should have merch. Well, you kind of went down that road, but it...
I did,
it wasn't,
but it's
like
expensive
really
to do.
Worth... Like, hey, who wants to buy an IDAC t-shirt for $35?
For like $25 or $30.
It's printed on a Fruit of a Loom t-shirt.
I think it was like Gildan or something like that. It was a decent, you know, brand. But yeah, it's expensive to do merch, both to set it up and for it to actually, you know, by the time, you know, all the costs for all the different vendors get factored into it. And even just if, you know, I don't really see it as like a money-making venture for us at all. We might you know, 7 shirts or something like that.
Well, even if you sold 700, you probably make like $1,000. I mean, people who sell that merch. Yeah. I mean, people who sell the merch.
The vast majority of that merch sale goes to the vendors and stuff like that. We would get very little, if any, unless we charge an exorbitant amount, which just, I don't know, just feels weird. So that's why I haven't really kind of pursued it past that.
I'd like to have IDAC t-shirts and put them in those guns and like shoot them into the audience at a conference. See if people...
Well, it sounds to me like... It'd be funny if people like... They don't want it. You're just shooting them with...
Yeah, they don't want it. They just don't want to be hit by your t-shirt launches.
Right. Well, go off and buy a... You go buy a t-shirt gun. I'll get a couple t-shirts.
All right.
So that's Identity Week America. That's what I'll be doing. You sent me an article about fragmented identity data. It was written by the CEO of IndyKite, and I hope I pronounce this correctly, but Lasse Anderson.
Lasse.
And we did have Lasse Anderson. And we did have Brad Toomey on the show from IndyKite back on episode number 168, way back at last year's Gartner. What are your thoughts on this article? I guess, can you kind of, you know, preface it or kind of summarize it here and we can kind of talk through it?
Yeah. So first off, Lasse is kind of like a legend in our space, in my opinion anyway. He was like co-founder of ForgeRock, and he's kind of like, you know, the technical side of that, really understood the platform, et cetera. And, you know, I mean, look at like the impact that ForgeRock has had in our industry. So, you know, very important person in the industry. He talked a lot about, I think, with this theme, which we've been calling authorization 2.0, which is really about like expanding the plane of data at the enterprise level that can be used for authorization. So, you know, to me, that looks like in the past, we've kind of said, all right, here's the data that you can use for authorization. We put it into the authentication store. Someone authenticates, you pull the data from that, you know, with the acceptance of the login, and then they can go and assert those authorizations. But I think this authorization 2.0 is to say, well, now there's information out in these other systems in the organization that we can crunch that data to determine what authorization someone has. So my favorite example has been you're logging in, and then there's, you know, a system that is for high net worth individuals. High net worth individual might mean you have $1 million in account balances. So you could imagine a scenario where there's a system that says, okay, here's your summarized account balance or something like that, or there's some kind of crunching of the data that goes to these different systems and figure out, do you qualify or not for that authorization? So, I mean, I think to me, that's like pretty groundbreaking, but at the same time, I do have a concern. And I don't think I've heard anybody else voice this concern, but my concern is that, you know, if the enterprise can be complex, and if somebody isn't kind of coordinating all that and understanding that, hey, if you go and change that business system that comes up with that account balance, to use that example, that's going to affect how people authenticate or how people get authorization to this other downstream system. So the bigger that blast radius is in terms of where you're going into all these business systems and finding data to build your authorization, you just have to make sure that you don't start making changes in the background that could affect that process, because you end up potentially breaking very important business processes, maybe mission critical business processes. And so that's my concern with increasing that blast radius of what is potential authorization data.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense, right? We've got all this data that we're collecting, and I think historically we've had data silos, and don't touch my data. You can't use it for anything.
Yes, right? Yes.
You know, those sorts of things. And now that, you know, if you're going to become more data-driven from an organization, that data is going to be accessible in some way. Now, I don't think I'm advocating for, I know I'm not advocating for things like, hey, let's not put social security number into our IGA platform. That is a world of hurt that nobody wants, right? And you don't need it for anything. There should be other ways to kind of solve that, or pay information, right? Or things like that that are kind of sensitive within the org itself. But taking these bits of data and then making them available to do more data-driven activities like authorization or authentication, or even just driving, you know, access, you know, permissioning to different to apps, or even, you know, physical things in the world. Hey, because I am in Chicago today, I get access to the Chicago office, right, or whatever that may be. Even though maybe my home office is Charlotte, right, or whatever that might look like. So I think there's a lot of opportunity. I don't feel like this is a new concept, but I think we're getting to the point where the systems are now recognizing that, and the vendors are recognizing that, and the most importantly, I think the business is starting to recognize that, of having that data be available to make, you know, better decisions, drive automation, kind of things like that.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great point. And the more interconnected, the more dependent systems become on one another, the more important governance and, you know, a good QA process that, you know, touches all these points and make sure that we're not going to break things when we create these extra interdependencies, I think is just mission critical.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't have anything else to add. That was good.
It was a good article. I mean, it, you know, it's important to think about things like that, because these are the major trends that are afoot. They're happening, and we're all going to be dealing with them in one way or the other.
Well, basically, how the vendors play together, because I think the article calls for, and I'll have a link to this in our show notes, right? We can kind of go read it, but this idea of interoperability between systems, and specifically identity systems. I don't know if that's traditionally been a strong point of identity and access management and vendors playing together. Usually you'll get something like an alliance where you have, you know, two or three vendors kind of working together. You know, the together is better sort of story. Now you've got a little bit more of a converged approach, seems to be happening more with vendors consolidating capabilities under like a certain platform. It'll be interesting to see how and if the actual identity technology vendors out there embrace this and start to, you know, adopt a more open stance, maybe making APIs more available for data, you know, where necessary, and having more of that, I don't want to say plug and play, but, you know, as close to that as possible, where you have like a Lego brick sort of environment where, you know, here's a brick that does this thing, and then, you know, you can easily attach it to this other brick that does this thing, and the data can kind of flow between, and it doesn't become a, you know, a secret sauce for a vendor, for example.
Yeah, those are great points. You know, I think the other thing back to kind of that change control, it's like, you know, sometimes my mind goes back to when you had developers on staff and they build applications and you'd be reaching it into the back end to get some of this data. Well, now it's probably APIs and a lot of cloud services. Again, you're kind of, you know, if you don't have very mature cloud services where they have a mature approach to, you know, iterating their APIs to say, okay, API version 1, API version 1.2, API version 1.3, but that those APIs don't just all of a sudden disappear. So if you're paying attention, you'll realize that there's a deprecation date for the API. And when that API becomes no longer available, that data is going to be no longer available. But you're signing up for that level of discipline when you start reaching out to additional systems. So, you know, that as I was reading that article, I thought, yes, like I'm all on board with this, with, you know, being able to make decisions with this data. It just, to me, becomes like a stronger requirement around governance and change control discipline. And I'd love to have Lasse come on the show and, you know, kind of talk about this topic or, you know, other topics in addition. So Lasse, if you're listening, reach out, man.
Yeah. What else we got?
I don't know. Are we going to end on a lighter note?
I didn't come up with anything for today, so it'd be totally spur of the moment. And I don't think NFL predictions are my forte anymore. do you have something top of mind for a lighter note?
Okay, yeah. So what is your ideal vacation?
Like physical location, like where I want to go or how I spend it? Give me some more details here to work with.
Okay. So if I was to give you 1 week, beginning of January, and just say, or say at the end of January, like, Jeff, you have to take this week off, and I'm not going to say that all expenses paid, like, you can pay for it yourself, You can go to the beach. You can go international or domestic. You can go to the mountains. You could do a staycation and like catch up on things. What is it? And maybe that lowers your stress level. What would you do with your week?
Wow, I have no idea. I feel like I would want to go somewhere that I haven't been to. I've always wanted to go, for example, to like Tokyo. But I don't think a week is long enough to do that. I think I'd want to spend more time there. Maybe something like Norway or Sweden or something like that would be very cool as well. Yeah. But the realist in me is probably like, I'll probably just stay at home, catch up on sleep, and play with my dogs, and watch TV, and eat more like crap than I usually do.
So if it's 2 weeks,
what would you do?
Do you like, well, actually,
2 weeks I might go somewhere kind of exotic, you know, I guess compared to domestic U.S. or something like that. But my favorite vacations are the one where I don't have a plan. It's just, hey, this is we're in this location. We don't actually have to, like, you know, be here by this o'clock and then over here at this time and then over there at that time. I'm more of a casual kind of free spirit, especially on vacation.
I do like the adventure vacations. I also like the sit on your butt vacations. I tend to like warm weather over cold weather. So I think I would like to go, it's interesting. Now that I said that, I say that one thing that you mentioned was Scandinavia. I've always wanted to check out those cultures, but I would want to go in the summer, as I think like they do like these really weird parties in some of the big cities where like everybody goes out on the street and they have like these big dance parties. So I saw this video, and this is one of like my rabbit holes in the YouTube world. Is like, I just watch these documentaries. Like, it'll suggest a documentary, and it's like, oh yeah, I want to learn that or find out about that. So one was about these parties that they have in, I don't know, like Helsinki or something, right? But all the people wore headphones, and yeah, they had like different DJs. So, you know, you could switch to channel 1, 2, or 3, and based on the one that you selected, your headphones would turn like blue, yellow, or green, so people would know what you're listening to. And the DJs would be set up with the that color stage and everything. And like people would like migrate to other people who were listening to the same kind of music and like dance together and stuff. And it's like, that we don't have anything like that in the US. At least not that I'm aware of. Maybe there's like rave parties that do that.
We do have that. And I just discovered this just a few weeks ago. I think it was in New York City for something and somebody mentioned it. And I guess it's called like a silent disco or other things, but the idea is everybody's wearing headphones, and yeah, it's, you know, you're hearing music, but it sounds really odd to me that you'd be like a bunch of people in a room or a hall or whatever it might be, and everybody's got headphones on, and, you know, I'm assuming they're dancing and doing whatever, but if you don't have headphones on, it's probably the weirdest thing to just watch a bunch of people doing this. I had never heard of it until a couple weeks ago, so I'm sure, but it's definitely here in the U.S. somewhere, but I guess not maybe in the circles that I run.
Yeah, not in our you know, middle-aged identity at the center circles, but mm-hmm. Yeah, watching this video is kind of weird. It's like all these people in the street and it's like pretty quiet, but they're all like dancing and, you know, I don't know. To me, that seemed like it would be kind of fun to experience. Not like something I want to do all the time, but, you know, some cool experiences like that. Plus, I think these countries are, you know, they have a lot of beautiful aspects. There's so much beauty in this world to go and explore and to do those things. So if I had 2 weeks, I guess I would want to go and do some of that. But I will say travel's like uber expensive. I was like, oh, next year maybe I'll make a trip to somewhere in Europe and started looking at the price of flights. And it was like $2,000 for, you know, coach class, which is pretty, you know, I mean, I don't mind flying coach, but it used to be like
for a coach, that's a lot. From,
yeah, it is a lot. But in the summer, if you want to go in like the prime time, which is when I would want to go.
Mm-hmm. Well, it sounds like you're already planning on getting your Delta status taken care of with flights like that.
Yeah, well, I mean, you spend just as much money for, you know, well, I guess the credit card is like 500 or 600 a year, but
yeah. Anyway, all right, let's go ahead and wrap it up for this week. We covered a lot of ground. I have no idea what I'm going to call this episode. Because
hey, you know, I was thinking about the garbage plate the other day. We could call it the garbage plate.
Yeah, maybe we'll go with that. All right, well, let's do it. We're on the web, IDACpodcast.com. We're on Twitter or X for now until they start charging. As soon as they charge, I'm out, man. Sorry, man. I'm not paying for Twitter. But we're there now at IDAC Podcasts. We're on YouTube. Check that link out, IDAC.live. Mastodon at IDAC Podcast at infosec.exchange. You and I are LinkedIn. Getting a lot of nice messages recently from folks who've been listening, which is very cool. People are still discovering us. So everybody who helps get the word out, you know, puts a sticker on something, all that stuff's greatly appreciated. That's really the kind of best way you can help Jim and I is, you know, help us keep doing this by having other people listen. So subscribing and liking and thumbs upping and all that good stuff is the best way you can help us. So we appreciate that. Jim, anything else or should we wrap it up?
Super secret guest for next week. We're going to be recording that episode here in a few minutes and looking forward to that.
Yeah, it's
going to be next week's episode.
Good teaser. All right. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll talk with everyone in the next one.